give my life and all I have. All right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we got a packed show for you today. All right, it's packed and it's going to be really interesting. At the back end of the show, we're going to be hearing a piece from Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, about why do people come here from all over the world. And it's taken from a talk that he gave in 2003, which is called Revolution, Why It's Necessary, Why It's Possible, and What It's All About. Before that, we're going to be talking with Ravi Ragbir, the founder of the New Sanctuary Coalition, and Joan Racho Jensen, a member of the coalition, who just spent 3 weeks in Tijuana. The New Sanctuary Coalition is building for a sanctuary caravan to spend 40 days and 40 nights at the border. All right. And before that, opening the show up, I'm really, really pleased to bring this to you. You know, I recently spent some time down in Tijuana talking to people who are the immigrants who have been they have been treated like they're in concentration camps. There's been a lot of stuff developing down there. And I'm going to be bringing you over the next few weeks, I'm going to be bringing you a lot of the stories that I brought back, the voices that I brought back from that experience, and people who were really talking about, one, what the immigrants face, what they faced in Honduras, what they face coming up, and what they're especially facing right now is not only as they're getting clamped down on inside in Mexico, in Tijuana and elsewhere, but also the role of the U.S. in relation to all this is extremely important for people to keep in mind, all right? So stay tuned for all that. That's going to be really, really a very important piece of this this next period of time. And we're going to just jump right into this right now. This is a talk I had with Enrique Moronas, founder of Border Angels. And since 1986, Enrique has dedicated his life to the prevention of thousands of migrant deaths that happened on the U.S.-Mexican border. And we're going to talk today about the border today and the migrant caravan in Tijuana. So check this out. Enrique Moronas, tell people who you are and what you do.
Sure. So my name is Enrique Moronas, and I'm the executive director and founder of a nonprofit group called Border Angels, Ángeles de la Frontera. It's an organization that started back in 1986. And the reason it got started was I found out that there was people living in the canyons of North County, San Diego, people that work in the fields, strawberry fields, etc. So I started going there to bring them food and water. 10 years later, in 1996, we started going out to the desert to put water. Because very sadly, after the United States and Ronald Reagan had said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, the United States built this wall right behind us here. And this wall has led to the death of more than 11,000 people. So in 1996, 2 years after the wall was built, we started going out to the desert to pull water so that the people wouldn't die. And it's really sad because this militarization of the border with the helicopters flying overhead and the Border Patrol closing the park and tear gassing people, it's a horrific example of how neighbors should treat neighbors. This monument right in front of us here is a monument that the United States, and when they invaded Mexico and stole half the territory, they put that monument there and that wall. And that wall's been moved because the wall, you know, keeps on coming down and they rebuild it. So the Border Angels were best known for putting water out there in the desert because that wall has led to the death of more than 11,000 people. So in 96, we started going out to put water. And we didn't have a name, we were just a group of volunteers. In 2001, that was my last year in professional baseball. I used to be with the San Diego Padres. And I came out on this very famous television show called Sábado Gigante. And when I came out on Sábado Gigante, Don Francisco said, El Ángel de la Frontera, which means the Border Angel. And that's how we got our name. That's what we're called, Border Angels. And now we're more than 5,000 volunteers. We're all over the world. Our base is in San Diego. But we also have an office and a shelter right here in Playas de Tijuana, where there's 32 beds, but right now we have 50 to 60 migrants in total. It fluctuates. I'm sure Hugo will give you the update. And so we do a lot of stuff. We go out and visit the day laborers looking for work. We do that on both sides of the border. We go to the desert to put water. That we do that the third Saturday of each month. Before Trump, we would have 30 or 40 volunteers. After Trump, we ended up having 500 volunteers in 2016 go out. Because people are outraged. People are outraged and they're paying attention. We do things here at Friendship Park. We used to do bi-national things, but now the real racist Border Patrol Chief, Rodney Scott, he shut down the park. He shut down the park. So they, not only do they not allow families to meet or people that have a bi-national mass, he's closed down the Door of Hope, where we had convinced them before to let children hug their deported parents. He's not allowing any of that anymore. And the United States is the only country in the Americas that has walls. And it's the only country in the world that has separated the children from their parents. Some of the children are in cages. But for Trump, that's not good enough. So last week, they were tear gassing children, tear gassing women. And once again, Rodney Scott said, oh, they were throwing rocks at us. Yeah, they were responding to the tear gas because the kids were being tear gassed and the women were being tear gassed. So they had things in their hand like water bottles and so forth. And I don't condone that type of behavior, but hey, they're attacking my kids. So it's a really sad situation. We're 5,000 volunteers strong. Yesterday we had our second caravan of love where 15 cars came full of donations for the Hondurans and our Central American brothers and sisters. We do that every Saturday. On a regular basis, we come down here and bring goods to the people because we believe that love has no borders. And the only way you can demonstrate love is in action, not just in words.
What do you think is the reason? I mean, just putting it out there, man. What do you think is the reason that this is happening now?
Well, people are traveling in caravans forever. You know, the exodus from Egypt, the stagecoaches coming from the East Coast to the West Coast, the Pinta, the Santa Maria, and they travel in caravans for safety. Undocumented migration to the United States is at an all-time low right now in my lifetime. There's, I remember 2014 when 60,000 children turned themselves in to the Border Patrol in Texas. That was just a few years ago. Now we're talking about these caravans, and when you take the last three caravans, in total you're talking about less than 10,000 people. So the numbers are way down. But the thing is that there's the image of the people coming together. That, and then Trump's taking advantage of that to say that it's ISIS and MS-13 and all that. There's definitely no ISIS, and there might be a few troublemakers in the caravans. Most of them are people seeking to get away from hunger or violence. And if it's violence, that's something that they can claim asylum for. But Trump, of course, is making it impossible for the people to even approach the port of entry. And he tried to change the law that you couldn't apply for asylum in another part along the border, but he was overruled on that. And so this is something that continues to happen. The situation in Central America has become more desperate. We, the Mexicans, were the largest group of people crossing without papers for several decades. 5 years ago, that changed. We are no longer the largest group. As a matter of fact, undocumented migration is at a really low right now. But the largest group now is the Central Americans. But before it was the Central Americans or the Mexicans, it was the Irish or the Germans or the Italians. So people have always traveled across borders trying to seek a better life. Currently, there's 250 million undocumented people in the world, 11 million in the U.S. Most are in other parts of the world, mainly in Europe. And so it's not anything new. It's just the propaganda that Trump's been, you know, sharing, the fake news that gets people all worked up. And then he's got a base. He's got a bigger base than I ever would have expected. And that racism, just like love has no borders, either there's racism. So we've seen people, the vigilante types that have crossed over here to provoke that hate over here. And some people have responded. There was a rock-throwing incident right behind us over here in Playas de Tijuana about 10 days ago, provoked by a woman from San Diego. She was throwing rocks at the Hondurans that were sleeping there with their children. We held a press conference here a couple of days later, and I said that the mayor, Juan Manuel, now has a new name, Juan Manuel Trump Jr. Gastelum. That got a lot of play around the world. And then that Sunday, there was a protest at one of the monuments, people that were against the migrants. It was a couple of hundred people. But this is a city of 2.5 million people. Most people are welcome to migrants and so forth. But even if it's just one person, it's very dangerous. One person can cause a lot of damage. Like the one person that had heard the message from Trump that the caravan were terrorists, and he heard that some Jewish people were going to help them, so he went into a synagogue and killed 11 people. Hate words lead to hate actions. And we pray that doesn't happen here or anywhere else anymore, but Trump's still around. He's a very dangerous man. And the caravans will continue. They'll continue all over the world. Not just here.
Wow.
And a lot of these people that came on the caravan recently are going to settle in Mexico, just like the 4,000 Haitians that are living here in Tijuana now, that have intermarried with Mexican men and women and so forth. Same thing's going to happen with the Central Americans. Some will settle here, some will go back to other parts of Mexico, some will go back to Central America, some will try to get asylum, very few will qualify, and some, unfortunately, are going to try to cross in the desert, which we do not recommend because they could easily die, like the 11,000 that have died because of this wall.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and this is a special edition of the show. It's actually the opening of a whole series of interviews that we're going to present over the next few weeks, maybe the next month or so, that are made up of conversations I had with people in Tijuana. And it was people who had come from way down in Central America, from Honduras, fought their way all the way up to TJ in Mexico, only to find themselves facing off against a massive fascistic U.S. military force and its border patrol, Nazis, all designed to keep the people out and to reinforce the kind of suffering that this system has already delivered immensely on all of these people. And I had the chance to speak to many, many people, people who were part of the caravan, people who weren't, people who were activists in Tijuana, other people who had come at other points to seek asylum. And all of it comes together to paint a very heavy story and one that people should know. So we will be doing this every week, starting the week after next, since it is the holidays. But we wanted to open it up this week and give you a taste of what's to come. Lots to learn, lots to be outraged about. So let's get together, listen to this, and then think about what the hell are we going to do in the face of all this? Recently, there's been a whole exposure of how the Border Patrol and all these other people and federal agents are going in and destroying the bottles of water that people leave in the desert for people to survive.
That's right. So we've been putting water in the desert since 1996. And before Trump, we'd have 30 or 40 volunteers. The November of 2016, with that horrible date when Trump was about to take office in a few months, we had 500 people that showed up. So we have these big groups of people that go out and put water. On the last Saturday, we do an extreme water drop where you hike 6 or 7 miles with heavy backpacks. It's very hard. And there's only three groups of people that go out there. The Border Angels, the A team of the Border Angels, the migrants, and the Border Patrol. And incredibly, we have found water bottles slashed. Like what happened in Arizona when our sister organization, No More Deaths, filmed the Border Patrol slashing and kicking over water bottles. We suspect the same thing is happening here. Remember, the corruption within the Border Patrol is at an all-time high. Just 2 months ago, a Border Patrol agent was found that he had killed at least 4 women. There was another Border Patrol agent that was caught bringing weapons into Mexico. Another one that was taking drugs across the border. So the Border Patrol corruption, which has always existed, is at an all-time high. And one of the things that Trump wanted to do was bring in 5,000 more Border Patrol agents, 5,000 more ICE, and 5,000 more DHS. He can't get the Border Patrol agents because they're dropping out faster than he can bring them in. And there was a study recently that said that the biggest rate of suicides amongst law enforcement and the military was in the Border Patrol. So there's a lot of trouble in the Border Patrol. You have unqualified people, racist people like Rodney Scott over there, and we're outraged and we're paying attention. Just like Heather Heyer taught us, the woman that was killed by neo-Nazis at the University of Virginia that Donald Trump said were some good people. Those neo-Nazis are not good people. None of them are good people.
You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you too is that when you're talking earlier, the whole situation with immigrants now, you know, there's the history of immigrants and the history of your organization in relation to this, but there's also been people are in flux all over the world. And when you look at this, including when you look at the, you know, I think it was really spotlighted by what happened with the people coming from Honduras and then the people that were picked up in the wake of that. And, you know, there's a whole question that people, when they get here, and as you mentioned earlier, they get here, people are getting, you know, they're being shunted aside. They're being told that there's no hope for them in the future. You know, get out of here, whatever. Then there's people like you who actually have to stand or have chosen to stand with people. And I want to know what you would say to people who hear this. What would you say to them about the responsibility that people have in relation to this? Because this, in my mind, this is a fascistic, I mean, this is the signs of the growth of fascism here. When you look at what Trump has been doing, when you look at the way that they, you know, the way they've changed this thing now that you were talking about, then also the fact that, you know, just watching that situation where they had all those troops lined up and all the barbed wire and all the high fences and all this other stuff for some people, and they were all armed to the teeth and ready to use the guns, and they did shoot some things at people, including the tear gas. And you think about that, what does that remind you of when you think about children being shot with tear gas canisters? You know, there's a definite fascistic arc here.
Absolutely. Today is Yom Kippur, and that reminds me of the times when the Nazis were doing that to children. That was the last time in it wasn't in my lifetime, that was before my lifetime, but not too much before, when they were tear gassing children, when they were, you know, building these walls, when they were separating the families, they were saying lies, they were saying that the media was, don't trust the media. That's the role model that Donald Trump has taken. That's the role model that he's taken. It's just horrific. And the whole world is watching. So what I would tell people is, we get a lot of journalists that, as a matter of fact, I was interviewed already by 3 or 4 international mediums today. One of them was for Germany, and I'll never forget. Der Spiegel was with us not too long ago. They're a big paper in Germany. And I remember they were in my car and we're driving out to the desert. And I told them, I go, When I was younger, I'd always think, what did the Germans do when the Nazis were doing what they were doing? You know, what were the people doing that, you know, how are they responding? Well, we're seeing that right now. A lot of people are doing nothing. They're doing nothing. They're letting Trump get away with this. And it's outrageous. These evangelicals, come on. What kind of evangelical church is that? That they allow Trump to, you know, first of all, the abuse of women that he's admitted to, the persecution of our Muslim brothers and sisters, the, you know, the attacks on the gay community, on veterans, on people with disabilities. Donald Trump is the worst of the American spirit. It is horrific what he has done. And too many people are silent. And we cannot be silent. We need to be outraged. And I'm outraged. And a lot of people are outraged. So a lot of people take that outrage and they join us. They join us, not only us, but other groups too. And they come out you know, we bring the caravans here with food and water, minister to the people. I've been down to Central America. Last year I spent a lot of time in Spain because this issue is much bigger in Europe. Last year was the deadliest year of people crossing borders around the world in my lifetime of 60 years. On this border, US-Mexico, was about 300 people that died. On the border with Europe and Northern Africa and the Middle East, it was more than 6,000 people. 300 people could die in one day. We all remember the image of Aylan Kuri, the little boy with the red t-shirt face down in the Mediterranean. Well, we had an Aylan Kuri too. His name was Marco Antonio Villaseñor, a little boy that died with 18 men after he had crossed into the United States. But nobody knows the names of these people or who they are. That's why we need to personalize this issue. That's what KPFK does and other mediums is very, very important because they tell the story. I'll never forget being in your studios when we were filming a movie called Detained in the Desert with Josefina Lopez. And that's a movie about the border rangers where she came with us. And she came and I was telling her the realities of what was going on. And we went to the cemetery where there's 600 migrants buried. And I said, these people are people that cross, like people cross all over the world. But when they were found dead, they didn't have IDs on them. So they're buried at this cemetery in Holtville, California. So people need to know that all of us want to have our children have better lives. All of us, that's universal. And people cross borders all over the world. Maybe it's an international border, or maybe they move from neighborhood to neighborhood, looking for a better life. So these people that are coming here from Honduras or wherever, they're welcome. They're welcome. If they want to come here, if they want to come into San Diego, they're welcome. Yes, there's resistance, there's hate, there's the militarization. I'll never forget that image of Thanksgiving Day this year. Thanksgiving Day, the busiest port of entry in the world. And there's the armed forces of the United States with their guns facing Mexico. That's what this United States has come to under Donald Trump. We got to stand up to that. We got to shut that down.
All right, Enrique, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Love has no borders. Join the Border Angels.
Actually, that's one thing. What can people do right now in relation to this?
So they can check out our website, borderangels.org. We're on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, etc. So look us up and join and participate. If you want to join us in one of our caravans of love, you're more than welcome to. You can all participate and help you.
All right. Thanks, Enrique.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back. That was Enrique Morones, and he was the founder of Border Angels. And I interviewed him in Tijuana just about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, talking about what is going on in Tijuana, what's happening with the people, what's happening with the migrants, and what people are actually going to be doing about that. And we will be hearing more from the Border Angels with the next edition of this whole series that we're doing, but it's actually a very important movement for people to check out. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. That's Migra, yeah, from Santana. And I just had to play that because of everything. It just seemed to fit so well, but it's also one of those songs that just gets you moving immediately. All right, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm really pleased to be welcoming back to the show Ravi Ragbir, who's a founder of the New Sanctuary Coalition. And joining us as well is Joan Racho Jensen, a member of the coalition. And Joan just spent 3 weeks in Tijuana, and we're going to be talking with both of these guys about what's happening there and what's going on. Ravi, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, man.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate being back on the show with you guys.
Yeah, definitely. And Joan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure. And next time I'll say, Joan, welcome back to the show. There you go. Anyway, my jokes sometimes fall flat, so please excuse me. Let's jump into this right away because I don't want to lose any time on it. This is an extremely important time for immigrants, for people, for humanity everywhere. What's being posed before people are questions that I don't think people really understand very clearly what's at stake and what's going on. So I really wanted to have you guys on to talk about this. Now, Robbie, let's start with you. Give us a brief description, one, if you can, about the New Sanctuary Movement, but also what's the coalition doing in relation to what's happening in Tijuana right now?
So I can describe the Sanctuary Coalition in one sentence. We are a network of faith communities who believe no one should be deported. Well, whatever country you're from, language you speak, your sexuality, your history, criminal history or not, your culture, we believe no one should be deported because the immigration law is racist. And we know that because if you look at the way they identify people, they basically look at people, the skin color of people, to target those who will be asked about documentation and status. So if the law is racist, there's no reason why we need to uphold a racist law. If anyone disagrees with me, we know who and what their beliefs are. And, you know, we've seen a lot of racism rear its head, as you heard Enrique talk about. You didn't know there was so much hate and racism in the country until we had a president, a black president, and suddenly they were coming out of the woodwork, and they had someone who were exemplifying their hatred in the new president. He himself is an idiot, we know that, but he's full of hate, and people can identify with that hate, and they will be justified in their violence because they're saying that he is the one who, if he can do it, he give us the authority to do it. When he sent the armed forces down to the border, he wasn't speaking to the armed forces. He was speaking to his vigilantes, the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan, to go down to the border so that they could incite violence. You heard Enrique speak about that. And the reason why we have gotten involved is because we know that the violence that is going to start at the border is going to also creep into the interior of the United States. And Enrique mentioned the Tree of Life Synagogue where 11 people were killed because they were just talking about refugees and asylees, right? Just talking about welcoming someone, and this hateful person just went in there and shot everyone. So I'll end with the fact that we are calling this the Kristallnacht moment. Back 80 years ago in Nazi Germany, when the Nazis had broken every glass on the synagogue, every Jewish businesses and synagogue, and no one did anything. This is a similar moment where we are seeing violence starting to rear its head, and we are not going to just sit back and quietly do nothing. So we have made a national call for people to head to the border to stop this president, to stop those vigilantes, to stop the hate. Michael?
Now, is that the 40 Days and 40 Nights campaign you're about to launch?
It is the 40 Days and 40 Nights. We have had a team down here. You'll be talking to Joan about what she saw, what she felt, and what they've been doing. And all, it is not just that they how difficult it is to be processed into the U.S., but you have heard the president and his administration continues to throw up roadblocks on how people can enter. So the most recent one is that they will say they will process people. If they're processing anyone asylum claim, that they will have to wait in Mexico. That doesn't make sense. There is no logical way that is going to work. But they are just trying to throw any roadblock to stop a lot, opening the doors to people who need safety and dignity. So, yes, it is the 40 days and 40 nights we're talking about to highlight the violence that is happening.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that's really interesting, too, and really, really revealing is that Trump actually, he's recently admitted that he was lying when he said that the U.S. can no longer process any more asylum seekers. He had actually issued that as a state of affairs. This is so nobody coming up to any of the border entries in any part of the country that borders on Mexico. He was basically saying, well, we can't do it. For some reason, we just can't process any more asylum seekers. And then it turns out that he was lying all along, and it was to create that kind of atmosphere, which is, I think, from what I've seen, there's something, it's really, I mean, I was very, very moved by and really you know, push to think hard about what's going on, what's happening there. And I thought your comparison with what had been done once before in history, or many times before in history, but in particular with the question of the Nazis in and earlier, and this is not an impossible development to happen here as well.
So I agree. But when has this president not lied? you made it sound as if it was a surprise that this guy lied. He's a liar. And we know that, and you know, we may want to. There may be people who want to pussyfoot around that, but let's be real, and we have to call him out for that. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to point out, because when you look at all the pieces together, we just built about 2 months ago. We just created the first concentration camp or the first internment camp in this period, the Tornillo, Texas, tent city. They call it tent city, where they want to hold 13,000 kids. Separated from their children in a desert. That's the first stage of the next stage of what history will repeat itself. So when I say this is a moment, this is a moment where we either stop history repeating itself, where millions of people will be killed, or we allow it to happen. Michael?
Mm-hmm. All right. Joan, let's move to you now. You just spent 3 weeks in TJ. What did you learn there? Why was it so important to be there, and what did you learn?
It's very chaotic there. And the reason I went to begin with was to be able to put a more distinct face on this crisis, on this caravan, on this, you know, immigration issue, because we have large collective words, but the truth is it's just thousands and thousands of individual pieces. Each one of these people have names. Each one of these people have stories. And each one of these people have a right to migrate. They have a right to go from where their life is threatened for whatever reason to a place where they can actually live and thrive. So what I saw was a collection of people who were trying to navigate a system that they didn't understand. You know, they got to one place, and then the way to proceed changes on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, and just trying to be able to negotiate that is impossible. So looking at it from the viewpoint of this is what the administration is doing, you know, and if you're not there and you're not involved in it, it's horrifying. And you say, well, how are these people going to do it? So New Sanctuary is there to try to help people on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. To negotiate it, to be able to understand what this process is, and how each one can proceed, take the next step forward. Mm-hmm. Like I said, every time we figured out this is what was happening, you know, within hours it would change.
Right. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Because, you know, one of the things that I saw when I was down there, I mean, it really did. And this thing about things changing so quickly. One was actually, you know, with the original shelter, supposed the so-called shelter they had, which was just basically a cesspool that they had set up and to throw people into. But, you know, what happened when they tried to disperse people to the outer edges of the city? I mean, there were places where they put people finally that, you know, people went there because they had no choice and they thought it might be better than where they were living in that pool of whatever that was down there. But they were so removed from, you know, the presence of anyone. It was like way back down. I don't know if you got a chance to go to that particular holding camp that they had there, but it really did remind one of, you know, these concentration camps where you walk into this thing and suddenly you're confronted by armed soldiers, armed to the teeth on their butt, you know, in combat gear and standing on trucks and white, making sure that nobody's handing out different papers or doing this other stuff, and people trying to live there. And you just see an endless terrain of, you know, basically of tents created out from whatever shelter people could get stuff there. And you kept wondering, well, there's something very wrong here, because this is not about helping people. This is not about helping people to find a way out of the mess that they're in. But it's actually, it really does, it really did remind me of, I think, what Robbie was pointing to earlier about this, you know, this growing sense of there's something bigger and far more worse that's creeping along the horizon now and beginning to show its teeth.
That's true. Where the bulk of the people are, it's very isolating, but it's isolating in a huge, massive way. You know, it's not, there are so many people, but again, you're right, they're so far out. It's not easy to get to. It's not easy for people to get to where they may need to go in order to find anything. You know, they're really stuck. They're stuck in a place that they can't negotiate except to be in that place. And I imagine for some people, you know, they don't feel safe, certainly don't feel safe there. Because you think, you know, like, where are they going to move us now? Where are we going to go? What do we have to do? And they don't have any answers. And it's horrible.
Michael.
And, pardon me?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say something, Michael. Would you want me to finish?
I was just going to say that it's horrifying to think that this is what we as a country is doing to them. You know, we're making this happen, and that's appalling. That's just absolutely appalling to me. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes I just don't have the words to how terrible this treatment is to other human beings.
Yeah, that's an important emotion and understanding to have, because sometimes words just cannot describe how horrible the situation is. Ravi, you were going to say something?
Right. So it's also deliberate because, you know, there's this so-called number system that they use. You put your name on a book and you have a number. And then when CBP, Customs and Border Patrol, calls that number, then you show up and then you are processed. And the problem is that's why people, no matter what, they were still trying to stay there because they don't have resources to travel back and forth to see if their number was called. But it's deliberate so that if people miss their number, they have to go back on and they have to restart. And then it's also about cleansing that whole area so that you don't see the problem. Mm-hmm. And it is deliberate, as Joan and you have heard, where the government or the U.S. government as well as the Tijuana officials have really seemed to be working together to block this and to stop helping people.
Yeah, you know, one of the other things, Ravi, that really struck me as well was that, you know, while that's definitely true, and I think that's really important, at the same time, for some of the people, some of the migrants that have come there have actually basically said, no, we're not going to do this. And so you find parks downtown being taken over by hundreds of people who refuse to just follow the orders and go into those camps. They can't find any, you know, nobody can find them. They can't have, you know, get back and forth. But they've planted themselves in the middle of the city, and they said, we want people to know we're here. We're not leaving until we get through to what we want, and we're going to deal with that.
Correct. And I mean, this, you have to remember it doesn't matter what the country conditions they come from. All that matters to me and the New Sanctuary and the volunteers and all the people who are working with us is that there are children and there are people crying out because they want safety. But you have to remember what these people are facing if they have to go back. They are facing death. So no matter what you put in front of them, it is still better than where they came from. And they have nothing to lose. And they will continue. They're willing to put their lives on the line because their life has no meaning if they go back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what is missing. That is what when you see a mom with a child with twins, trying to run across the border is because she wants to be able to create a safe space for her two daughters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Ravi, we have just 4 minutes left to go, and I wanted to ask you this in particular, so you'll have to excuse me for just jumping into this one and pushing the thing ahead. And, Joan, we look forward to talking to you again, and you might have something you want to throw in, but I really wanted to talk to you about this, Ravi. This question that you're taking action, your group is taking action. Then one side, there's the volunteer training, which I think is really important for people to know about. And the second thing is that you have actually called for, and you started to mention this, but I want to hear a little bit more. And again, we have 3.5 minutes now, a call for thousands to go to the border and what difference that is going to make.
So we want to show that there is more of us, meaning people who are welcoming, loving, kind, than there is of them who hate. And no, there's 63 million people who voted for this president, right? And there's a lot of people who hate. But we're in a collective trauma right now. And everyone, I mean, you talk to anyone in this country right now, no matter what side they are on, they're feeling a trauma. They're feeling something is happening. And a lot of people don't know what to do. So when we said we want to be able to make this call, it's an opportunity for people to stand up. It's an opportunity for them to say, well, hey, this is, I know something is wrong. this is what I know is wrong, and I'm going to do this because I need to stop the direction of history repeating itself. And this caravan is a target of that violence, and I need to put my body on the line for them as they're putting their body on the line to seek safety. So even if you cannot be at the border, you can still be ready at where you are, because people, their destination is not San Diego. Their destination is to Pennsylvania, New York, wherever they have friends and relatives in the country that they're heading to. And you need to be able to welcome them there and help them navigate the immigration process with our training so that they are protected during this process. And so this is why we are calling everyone out to start planting the seed where they are, to open their arms up to about refugees and asylees, but largely about changing the immigration system. That is, we know it's racist, we know it's violent, we know it's wrong. So when we talk about abolishing ICE, we know we stand on strong grounds about abolishing ICE, and the people will need to stand up to abolish this rogue agency that is causing so much destruction on our communities.
All right, Robbie, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Before I go, Michael, people can go onto sanctuarycaravan.org. They can get everything what we just talked about. We do need more volunteers. I appreciate you doing this, Michael, and I'm happy to come back anytime you want to invite me.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. And say that again. Where do people go to find out how they can get involved in this?
Sanctuarycaravan.org. SanctuaryCaravan, caravan.org.
All right. Robbie, thank you very much for joining us today, Robbie.
Thank you, Michael. Okay. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Okay, you too. And Joan, thank you very much for joining us today as well.
Thank you for having us.
All right, hope to talk to you again soon. Take care. All right, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we have just been talking with Ravi Raghbir, and he is from the New Sanctuary Coalition, and he's also was joined by Joan Racho Jensen, a member of the coalition as well. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with a little piece from Bob Avakian, so stay tuned. Welcome back. Yep, that's right. Chucky Weiss with Bomb the Tracks, all right? And that is a metaphorical song, but it poses a moral issue before everyone, a moral and a reality issue before everyone. We're sitting here in a situation where the growth of fascism is no longer and the establishment of fascism is not a faraway dream. It's not somebody trying to just go crazy with stuff or going too far. You look at what's happening in Mexico, the folks we've been talking to talked about this. I see what's happening down there. You look at what's happening here in this country day after day. Truth is whatever the Nazis want it to be. This is, you know, people are being pilloried, basically literally and figuratively. And the kinds of things that are happening are unacceptable. And they are unacceptable because if those things are to go on unopposed, it could mean not just fascism, but a very, very dangerous time for all of humanity and the planet. And sisters and brothers, people need to start thinking about what the hell are we doing? How much? How long? Those questions. How much? How long? And we need to start thinking about what we're going to do. And I wanted to bring this to people because we've played it before, but it's a very important piece. It's a piece I've really liked of Bob Avakian's, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And I think it actually poses the question very well, all right? And this is a piece called Why Do People Come Here? And check this out, and we'll be back after it's over.
Now I can just hear these reactionary fools saying, well, Bob, answer this. If this country is so terrible, why do people come here from all over the world? Why are so many people trying to get in, not to get out? Maybe we can imagine someone like Vice President Dick Cheney, that crooked mouth monster and worldwide mass murderer, Maybe we can imagine him saying something like this. Yes, Bob, why is that? Why? I'll tell you why. Because you have f***ed up the rest of the world even worse than what you have done in this country. You have made it impossible for many people to live in their own countries as part of gaining your riches and power. Besides everything else that I've mentioned, let's look at what they did in the Congo back in the early 60s and the effect this has had right up to today. The Congo used to be a colony of Belgium. It was the most brutal kind of colonization, working the people literally to death in the mines and other places. They worked them so viciously, literally like slaves, and if they didn't work hard enough, the overseers there would cut off the hands of the people. Finally, after World War II, the people of the Congo got rid of the domination and colonization by Belgium. And they set out to try to build a new country for themselves, and a leader emerged, Lumumba, who was a very popular leader among the people in the Congo. An election was held, and Lumumba won very clearly. But because he was setting out to overcome this legacy of colonialism and all domination by imperialism, the U.S. would not allow it. They maneuvered, they trapped him, they got him into a situation where he was taken and assassinated. And what did they do in place of Lumumba? What did they bring to the people of the Congo? Mobutu, a vicious, brutal tyrant backed by the U.S., kept in power for decades, plundering the people of his own country, building up and amassing tremendous wealth while the people were suffering worse and worse. And then they say, well, see, these people aren't ready for independence. They can't handle their own affairs. Look what happens when they get their independence. Yeah, look what happens. And look deeper and see why. To understand how this system works and how it controls and shapes people's lives, let's look at how people from Mexico and black people end up living alongside each other in somewhere like Watts in Los Angeles or New Jersey or New York City today. It's 1780 or 1800, and someone is walking through their home village in Africa. Maybe they're taking care of a few cattle. Maybe they're tending a few crops. Maybe they're just out for a walk and enjoying the sunny day in the summer. Whatever, all of a sudden they're grabbed and a rope is thrown around them. They're dragged away, never again to see their village or their loved ones. They're transported to a seacoast where they're sold to slave traders, thrown in the hold of a ship under the most horrific and unimaginable conditions, piled together. If you've ever seen drawings, diagrams of slave ships, people packed together, cargo, as they were called. Rats crawling over you day and night, slop at most to eat, never even allowed up on deck to even get any fresh air. If bad conditions arose on the seas, storms developed, the slave ship owners would go among the cargo, the human beings, and decide which one should be thrown overboard so they could save the rest of the cargo so they could make a profit. And through all that horror, you're finally brought to the Americas. Have everything stripped away from you, even your identity. Forced to slave, the people forced to slave away for generations. As the old saying goes, from can't see in the morning till can't see at night. After all the unbelievable horror of what I just described on the slave ship, the Middle Passage, for millions, where millions and perhaps tens of millions died, and those who survived were subjected to these unbelievable conditions of slavery. After generations and centuries of that, finally comes the Civil War. You're promised an end to oppression. You're promised you'll get land and a means for farming the land, 40 acres and a mule. But the promise is broken. After a few years of Reconstruction, in which a few people got some rights and a little bit of land and property, people were stripped of all that and subjected to all the kind of terror and lynching that I've talked about here. This goes on also for generations. The KKK and the rest of it, forcing you to remain on the plantations, terrorizing you into working for the man, being cheated even when you do work. Finally, after World War II, you're driven off the land. You seek a better life. You go to the city or you go to the north. And what do you face? Once again, betrayal. You are segregated once again, terrorized now by the police. You end up in a housing project that's being allowed and deliberately constructed to rot away. In ancient Mexico, in the beginning of the 1500s, the Spanish conquistadores arrive in what they call the New World. The Spanish conquerors destroy the old ways of life and work people to death in the mines and on plantations called haciendas. This old way of life was not free of exploitation and oppression and plunder, but the Spanish did not come to liberate the people or to do away with exploitation, oppression, and plunder. They came to institute their own, an even worse and far more vicious form of exploitation and plunder, literally working people to death in the mines and on the haciendas, destroying their culture, taking away everything from them. About 150 years ago, after Mexico became independent from Spain, the U.S. waged war on Mexico and stole a large part of its territory. One of the main reasons for this is that the slave owners in the southern U.S. needed more land. The U.S. replaced Spain and other European colonial powers as the force dominating and plundering Mexico. The Mexican Revolution in the early part of the 1900s promised land to the peasants, but there was never a fundamental change, and the masses of people were still trapped in a situation of being exploited as poor peasant farmers while their country is plundered by the U.S. Throughout the 20th century, and even more so in recent years, the ever greater domination of farming in Mexico by big American agricultural companies has ruined the livelihood of millions of more peasant farmers in Mexico who are already living in poor and desperate conditions, but were driven further into such desperate conditions, so much so that they could no longer survive by farming. The Mexican government goes into more and more debt to big banks and financial institutions in the rich countries, especially the U.S. And then, at the insistence of the U.S., it cuts off aid to the peasants who are still trying to survive by farming in Mexico. In effect, the government forces them to grow crops that get sold internationally on what is called the world market, which is controlled by the rich countries and their financial institutions. But the Mexican peasants cannot compete in this world market. They cannot make a living. They can barely survive, if they can survive at all, by farming. Writing in our party's newspaper, The Revolutionary Worker, in 1994, shortly after an uprising in Chiapas in the southern part of Mexico, Michael Slate gave a sharp example of this. He wrote about what has happened to Mexican agriculture over the past 30 years. Now, agri means having to do with the land, so agriculture is a way of life based on the land. Slate described how over the last 30 years, Mexican agriculture has been greatly damaged by even more deeply mixed in with and dependent on the world market. Peasant farmers growing things not for their own needs and not necessarily for what is needed in Mexico itself, but what can be sold to big buyers all over the world. Once again, a world market dominated by companies controlling billions of dollars. Deeply in debt and under pressure from the World Bank, which itself is dominated by the U.S., the Mexican government promoted crops that could be sold on the world market in order to try to pay off this debt that it was sinking deeper and deeper into. Land and resources were shifted away from basic food production, and the results have been a disaster for the peasants. In Chiapas, for example, most peasants used to grow corn and beans, but over the years, many switched to growing coffee for export. When the price of coffee fell on the world market in 1990, thousands of Mexican peasants were ruined. And in a recent issue of our newspaper, the RW, there's another article detailing more fully how imperialist domination from the U.S. through things like NAFTA and other ways have further ruined the peasants in Mexico. Another thing mentioned in that article is the maquiladoras in Mexico, just inside the border with the U.S. These are factories that are set up by U.S. companies. They move away from the U.S. and put them just over the border in Mexico. And that line there, that border, is the difference between wages that are 10 times higher on the U.S. side and 10 times lower on the Mexico side. And who works in these maquiladoras? People who can no longer live in the interior, in the countryside, on the farmlands of Mexico, and especially many women who are not only brutally exploited, but also sexually harassed on the job, and many have been murdered coming to and from the job in these border areas. But even that's not enough. Now many of the maquiladoras are being closed down on the border, while some new ones are being built further in the interior of Mexico in order to take advantage of people who are impoverished there. And still others are being moved to other places, in Asia and elsewhere, where people can be worked for even lower wages because they're even more desperate. So through all this, you find yourself having to leave your home and your homeland in Mexico to go to El Norte, the USA, where you face discrimination and exploitation, living in fear every day of the immigration police, La Migra, if you don't have the necessary papers. You too end up in Watts, or in New York City, or New Jersey, or other cities in the U.S. In the early 80s, there was a movie starring Jack Nicholson and Elpidia Carrillo called The Border, which dramatically showed the kinds of hardships that drive people and the promises and illusions that call them to cross the border from Mexico into the U.S. And it showed the hardships they suffer once they come to the U.S., the ways in which they are treated as aliens, and how they are exploited and brutalized in so many ways. The following lines from the theme song of that movie give a powerful sense of what this means. The bitter disappointment that is found in the so-called promised land of the USA, and the many ways in which people are still hemmed in by the visible and invisible borderline. Now, my voice is hoarse, but I'm going to give this a try. There's a land, so I've been told. Every street is paved with gold, and it's just across the borderline. And when it's time to take your turn, here's a lesson you must learn. You will lose more than you'll ever hope to find. And when you reach the broken promised land, every dream slips through your hand, and you'll know it's too late to change your mind. 'Cause you paid the price to come this far, just to wind up where you are, and you still just across the borderline. For oppressed people who have been through all this, what sense does it make to fight over the crumbs the oppressors leave us, or to fight for control of things we can never really control under this system, including the very neighborhoods we live in, the neighborhoods they have forced us into while they run these neighborhoods down? What sense does it make to fight each other like that when we are part of the same class of exploited and oppressed people who can rise up together to put an end to all this? There is a whole long and bitter history in this country and all over the world of the oppressors getting one people they are oppressing to fight against another, all for the benefit of the oppressors themselves. Think about the experience of the Buffalo Soldiers. Bob Marley wrote a song about this. Danny Glover made a movie about it. But the reality is that these were soldiers, black soldiers, who after the Civil War wanted to prove that they were loyal Americans, that they would earn their place now that they won their so-called freedom. And what were they put to doing? Slaughtering the native peoples, finishing them off in their own home territories, carrying forward the genocide against the native peoples and the theft of their land and the resources in their land. It's a bitter lesson. On the other side of the picture, you have the experience of the Cherokees in America. Back in the 1800s, Old Hickory, Andrew Jackson, the great example of American democracy in evidence as President of the United States, and by the way, a slave owner, convinced some of the leaders of the Cherokees that they could get in on all the goodness of America, and he allowed them to purchase plantations. And they even went ahead and purchased slaves and ran slave plantations. But then a few years later, Andrew Jackson and those who ruled the U.S. decided the land was too valuable for Cherokees to have it. So they were driven out of there and sent on a horrific march toward Oklahoma, a death march where especially old people and children died by the wayside, what became known as the Trail of Tears. Another bitter lesson. But the greater lesson is this. We have reached the point in human history and the development of human society where we don't have to be trapped in this kind of situation and played like this anymore. We have the basis. We have the basis not only to unite those who are oppressed under this system, but to sweep away all this garbage they want to keep getting us caught up in, to sweep away the source of all this, their system itself. Now, next, I'm going to get into how all these things flow from the very nature of the system and why it cannot be reformed. It must be done in and done away with. We need a revolution, the most radical revolution in the history of humanity. And I'm going to be talking about what this revolution is all about. But first, it's time for a break and intermission.
All right, welcome back. That was Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. If you want to hear that again, you can go to revcom.us and find it. I want to thank my engineer for today, Teddy Robinson, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Talk to you again very soon.
Watch the sunset in the borderland with the rattlesnakes. No water, no people, a dying mistake. Que tenemos nada, que queremos todo el mundo. Que tenemos nada, que queremos todo el mundo. Que tenemos nada.